Hey Dimitri, how are you doing? You good?
Hi Dudley, how are you doing? Yes, I'm good. Let's get actually to the point. Why would people need this kind of approach in the first place? Because, I mean, that's actually important to understand what the value we're getting from getting human into the loop, right? And having all this explanation. This actually goes back to some misinterpretations, lack of trust to artificial intelligence and any other aspect of this new technology. So basically, I would guess use four main reasons why these human in the loop approaches or any other similar approaches are important. Well, first of all, they're building trust in AI system, and we know that it's not there yet, this trust, right? The second one, we need to make sure that we are in compliance with regulations. I mean, we're talking about FDA regulations, we're talking about security regulations, we're talking about some ethical rules that needs to be in place, and a lot of companies actually putting using some policies related to artificial intelligence using development models. Obviously, debugging, and I mean, after all, we're working in the technology, in the industry with very complex technologies. And when you work and when you develop something that complex, like artificial intelligence, you need to trace what is happening, why it's happening. And I mean, and you can use basically the word debugging, right? And obviously, the another reason is improving those models. So when you debug and improve these models, you better understand what went wrong, why it went wrong, and how this needs to be fixed, and how you're gonna test that you actually fix something and now it's working a little bit better, right? And I mean, I guess facilitating human collaboration between humans and artificial intelligence in general, because that's next stage. I mean, we have to collaborate, we have to work together.
So maybe we just dive into sort of the first sort of main topic, and we're talking about human oversight in AI. And there's a concept called human in the loop, so HITL, human in the loop. And if we just sort of have a look at it, so picture this: an AI system that can help doctors diagnose diseases. So let's say can analyze like tons of medical data, but the doctors are there to confirm the diagnosis, so ensuring that nothing important is overlooked. Another example maybe could be law. So in law, where AI system can review like mountains of documents, but there's still a human lawyer that's there to check the findings, ensure everything is legal and all the legal nuances are considered. And then blending that with the speed of AI, human wisdom, all coming together to get the best results. I mean, those are sort of two very easy use cases.
Yes, you're actually right on the spot, Dudley. That's a great example. And as you said, the image processing by artificial intelligence is, as you said, one of the great examples, because humans, when they do analyze pictures, obviously they're trained at medical images. They obviously they're training to find those artifacts, found those deviations. But artificial intelligence, that's actually the case when artificial intelligence, to some extent, it's not human in the loop, it's artificial intelligence in the loop case, because artificial intelligence makes sure that nothing is missed. So yes, it can provide some false readings, it can provide some false positive or false negative results. But at least when it provides false positive results, then doctor can actually take a look and say, well, no, that's actually not something I consider as a deviation, and basically he can change interpretation. Also, artificial intelligence can find some previously unnoticeable by humans artifacts. And actually we've seen a lot of cases when after implementing artificial intelligence for image processing, the doctor started to see more artifacts, because before they just didn't consider them in the first place. And artificial intelligence, that I mean sounds kind of weird, started to train a doctor with a huge experience and with a high level of trust to their interpretation. They started to make adjustment, and they started to look at some nuances, and they're getting better after working with artificial intelligence results. So we're seeing very weird consequences these days.
Yeah, it's almost a feedback loop to a large extent. This actually probably goes very, very well into the next sort of section, which is about explainable AI, or XAI, as some people call it, where we're also talking about things like AI is making decisions clear to us. So like for simple tasks, I mean, if we use models like decision trees, or which are pretty straightforward if you think about it, but imagine like some system that decides on loan approvals, like for banks, a decision tree, very easy, no problem. Why is a loan approved or not approved? But for more complex tasks, like a self-driving car, and I mean, if you look at the medical devices these days, we look for advanced explanation methods, like the LIME and SHAP. This is sort of helps engineers identify AI decisions. And I think it's very important for improving safety and performance. So it's like having a conversation with an AI to understand what it did and why did it do it. And I like that feedback loop that you're talking about.
Let's talk about those CHAP and LIME approaches. That's actually, so basically their main goal is to provide some level of explanation why the model made this decision. And let's try to dive into the technical nuances, because I mean, we do need to understand what specifically those approaches. I mean, they're similar to some extent. So for example, SHAP model approach, what it does, it creates all possible combinations of features. So basically, the feature can, it's not just one feature, right? Because I mean, our input is a little bit more complex, it's multiple features. So it creates huge amount of sets with, as I said, with all possible combinations. And then it basically runs predictions or runs the model for each of these sets. I mean, they call it coalition in this approach. And once all those predictions are executed, the model calculates the marginal contribution of each feature by comparing those predictions with each other. Mm. And then there is like a relatively simple math that goes into the place. And once it's done, then we can explain which feature, what specifically triggered the model to make this decision or that decision. The LIME approach, it's basically also create some samples or around instance. I mean, it's a little bit smaller, a little bit leaner than the previous one. And again, it runs those samples, it runs those predictions, and then it creates its own model around those results. What people need to be, I guess, aware, while it sounds very useful, right? I mean, and attempting to implement, there is, well, first of all, there is a trade-off between accuracy and interpretability. So basically, the more complex your model is, it's much harder to do the interpretation because you need the number of coalitions, for example. It just too big in order to handle it with, I guess, regular equipment, right? Another piece, sometimes explanations are not very stable. I mean, we're talking about, I mean, the same hallucinations that we were talking about. And when you're creating your model and you're creating those explanations and framework of explanation, well, I mean, you need to make sure that it's stable and actually it works properly, right? Human-friendly explanation is also needs to be considered because there is some mathematical explanation that very easily can be calculated and you need to show it to the non-expert. So it's actually another layer when you need to convert those formulas, those sensitivities, those deviations into some, I don't know, heat maps. I mean, there are some techniques that actually, additional technique on top of this. And I guess I did mention it, but it needs to be emphasized, computational overhead. Mm-hmm. It's just way expensive. I mean, we're talking about 100,000 times more complex than running the model itself. If so, I mean, sometimes actually even more, even bigger. And well, I guess you need to know that there is so-called local and global approaches. And we are, I don't think we'll get into this math. It's very complex. So literally, you need to know what you're doing. And another recommendation that's actually I would give for using of this model, you need to build them in ahead of time. It's very hard to create this validation explanation platform once the model is implemented. It's just some math that you are putting into your model. And if you basically miss a train, then it's a little bit too late to apply those explanations model on top of the regular model. So I guess what I'm trying to say that it's a great tool and it needs to be used, the way it needs to be used, But it's, I mean, when we're talking about artificial intelligence, complexity of the artificial intelligence complexity, and if you want your explanation, then you literally, it's another order of complexity to put on top of the artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I think one of the things that really comes to mind when you're talking like that is the layers where you're trying to not just do the technology side of things, but you're also trying to maybe have a strategic approach to, like as I mentioned, the decision trees, that decide what it is that you're trying to accomplish and then how to actually get visibility on that. I want to maybe just jump into the next one because I think this feeds very, very, very nicely into what we're talking about now. And that's the transparency in AI. You could probably say it's a bit like, creating your favorite recipe and creating a dish of food and having a clear understanding what's inside your food. What is the recipe? How was the food made? But what are the component parts of the recipe? So I think it's a bit like understanding the ingredients or the steps that has to be taken by the AI. So let's take a few examples just in finance. So things like documenting the AI architecture, data sources can help traders, for instance, on the trading platforms. They can model decisions, sort of public policy, if you look at it. Another area where transparency is key, and the transparency in AI models ensure decisions affecting people and citizens that they fair. So even things like model cards are a great tool. So for instance, summarizing everything from a model, its purpose to performance and making it easier for everybody to understand. And I think that's where you're coming to is that sort of transparency in addition to understanding what model you're going to be using.
Well, transparency is always good, regardless of is it artificial intelligence, business complexity, because transparency, I mean, that's a whole term, I guess, is all around to understand why decisions are made, what comes into these decisions. We inside of the company, for example, trying to explain our people why we're making such decisions. And sometimes the people don't understand because, you're making some business decisions, right? And it doesn't make any sense when you're just working on some project. And sometimes you have to explain you put transparency and then you explain why you're making this. So transparency can actually bite you at some point. But but without transparency, again, it is essential part of the understanding how model works. I mean, it's not exactly why model made such decision, but it's about how it works. What kind of data went into the training? I mean, for example, ChatGPT, we know very well what kind of data was fed to train ChatGPT, right, with its own nuances. I mean, a good example, for example, would be in this case, in the ChatGPT, it used Reddit, a lot of stuff from Reddit. And as a result, it actually contains some garbage because in Reddit, you have some very interesting, very useful information, but sometimes experts provide totally irrelevant answers, and ChatGPT sometimes provide those experts irrelevant answers, unfortunately. And when you know it, that, for example, Reddit was used to train ChatGPT, you are aware about this, and sometimes it can provide you the garbage. Therefore, you need to make the following steps in order to double-check provided information. So that goes to the transparency, right? If ChatGPT wouldn't say so about the training data, where exactly they pull the data, people wouldn't understand it and people would be confused. Why does it provide such weird results? But no, transparency, guys. I mean, we're all transparent here. You are. We know that it's going to provide this garbage. Yes, we're cleaning it up, but unfortunately, we try to be open. We try to consume all the information from the internet, whatever is available, and we're showing it here, just like regular human who can have some garbage in his brain, right? Yeah. So
that actually comes to bias, because bias in the, like you said, the garbage in someone's brain, because if you just, even if you just go into social media, that's quite crazy what people can actually think of. Yeah. But let's just look at the ethics. I mean, for me, ethics are critical. So sort of regular bias audits, I think, are things that help the fairness and things like in hiring, AI systems can be used to not favor one demographic over another, for instance, like policing. If we look at policing, in one area, you can reinforce these biases if you're not careful. You could have nice, fair biases or nice, fair treatment of people, can oversee practices and things that are happening on a day-to-day basis. And even just trying to maintain certain ethical standards. And if you look at things like Reddit and social media and all these the sources that are potentially got where ChatGPT gets information or where AI, some of the large language model gets information, they could be have lots of hidden biases that you don't pick up until you've run the model and you see it. What's your view on that? Because yes, you've got to be transparent, and there's a whole lot of things about interpreting data. But again, it's about understanding what are all the biases that could be hidden.
Well, biases that do exist, right? And again, it comes back to the source of the information that was used to train the model. And it is very well known. And I mean, there is it's not bad or good. It's just what it is, because, well, ChatGPT, particular Gemini, since they were trained on the internet is biased to the Western world. It's not biased to the Eastern world. I mean, maybe if you take the entire internet, I don't know, I wouldn't actually make such conclusion, but the resources that were used to train Gemini and ChatGPT, they're definitely Western biased. And again, I don't want to get into the is it good or is it bad. I don't want to get into the politics. Another piece, since a lot of, well, even Reddit, it's still a social network. What is, I guess, one of the disadvantages of any social network is a huge bias around several topics. So people just want to get their agenda through, that they knowingly lie, they knowingly represent something, they knowingly exaggerate something, they knowingly provide incorrect information just to prove their point. It happens, and especially these days when people just want to get through. And unfortunately, this kind of garbage, it does affect this model, and model starts behaving weirdly. I mean, it's kind of a dead horse, but I guess we're going to kick it one more time. We all remember the huge failure of Gemini when they started to implement safeguards against potential misuse or some unintended results. The first version, it was a joke, and Google quietly fixed it. So they decided that they made it too much about safeguards. But this problem still exists. And unfortunately, ethical rules, they're still being developed by industry. And hopefully we will get decent results at the end of the day. But right now, it's a little bit messy, let me put it this way, even now.
But there's a concept, and I mean, you manage a business and you help clients manage theirs in terms of this implementation of AI and so on. But for me, there's this concept of watchdog. Like, who watches the watchdog? I mean, if they are going to put watchdogs in place, but if you just take the concept of continuous measurement, continuous improvement, I think that's a much healthier way of looking at it. So it's like having a watchdog, but more of something like continuous monitoring. I think that's quite useful. I mean, and if you look at some of the uses, just to give you an idea, some streaming services, like when you're watching TV or listening to podcasts and so on, they suggest relevant content as the trends change. For instance, banks use fraud detection, so things like to spot new fraud patterns, etc., having alert mechanisms to notify teams that something's off, but making sure they act quickly, but then they are retraining and regularly retraining models every time there's new information learned. So it's about keeping the AI sharp and reliable. And I think If I just think that through a little bit, it's a bit like us human beings. I mean, we're not perfect either, and if we're not in a constant training, constant reevaluation process, having other people look at us, how are we performing, how are the people around us performing, giving feedback to different people around you. It's the same thing with AI. I don't think there's one single press button, everything is perfect. It's having a feedback loop again, but feedback back into the AI models and the retraining. What do you think about it?
Well, so you're basically talking about control by humans to make sure that artificial intelligence actually behaves, properly behaves, because models, they do change. New information is fitting into the models. It can affect what and how it can interpret. Obviously, you need to put a monitoring system around artificial intelligence. I mean, and we're not talking just some VNV validation and verification process that must be in place as a part of the model improvement and model development. We are talking about in general, so monitoring what kind of results was created, regularly reviewing those results. And unfortunately, that's why ChatGPT keeps and any other Gemini, pretty much any other model, saying human will review your questions and humans will review your answers. I mean, and that's just to improve the quality. I mean, yes, you can opt out from this process, obviously, but it's still essential piece even for the most advanced models that we have in place. Because again, as we were talking about, there is I will be extremely surprised if OpenAI implemented some kind of explanation why ChatGPT produces these results or that results. I mean, they were complaining about the cost of running ChatGPT in the first place, and I'm ready to bet that they don't have any explanation model on top of the ChatGPT that would be just way too expensive. I mean, their model is just way too complex for this kind of approach. And therefore, you just need to, it means that you need more complex system to monitor it. And as of now, the more complex system comparing to the artificial intelligence is a human. So I guess human's still in the loop and human still is involved in the model performance and model results. And yes, obviously putting metrics that measure model, it actually make it easier to monitor, make it easier to make sure that it doesn't deviate too much from the expected results. And this is an essential part of any artificial intelligence project. I mean, we're talking about, you know, the level of monitoring is, yes, different. And I wanted to add, we are moving in the direction. I'm not sure how feasible, but it's being tested right now. So basically, those monitoring system that monitor your artificial intelligence, they're trying to implement them using with another artificial intelligence model. So artificial intelligence gonna monitor artificial intelligence.
That's interesting. So that's why I mentioned the watchdog thing, because who watches the watchdog? And it's I suppose it's the same thing as governments and any kind of sort of leadership organization. Who watches the leaders? Who leads the leaders? You know, that kind of thing, and who keeps them in check? So it's always interesting, the whole concept. But there is also the there's one last one, which is really the sixth main point that we need to get to today, and that's that user-friendly element of AI. So if we think about the AI sort of powered chatbots, the cut in sort of something like customer service, they need to show confidence scores, so alongside responses, so the user can decide to whether to trust the suggestion or not. So things like tutors or teachers providing plain language explanations to help students understand complex things better, designing interfaces, things like non-technical users being able to interact seamlessly with like highly technical things. I think it's critical. And it's also about making AI more accessible to everyone. But imagine it's a bit like a star rating in your service. If your service is a 2 out of 5 star rating, and you have that on your website or wherever it is, where it's a 5 out of 5 star rating, there's a confidence whether someone else will use your service or not. And it's almost the same kind of concept within AI, and make that easy for people to say, what's the confidence level that this information is correct? If you build in all those other elements we were talking about, transparency and monitoring and constant improvement and having these watchdog elements, et cetera. What's your view on that type of thing, sort of scoring and monitoring those type of things?
Well, I mean, user-friendly interfaces, I mean, that's actually quite a wide topic in general by itself. I guess there are two aspects of this user-friendly interfaces. The first aspect is actually the results of the models or model itself needs to be user-friendly, right? I mean, it should produce it in the intended use, I guess. And another aspect, I mean, that's what we were talking about, is about explaining why this model does this or does that and why it does. Obviously, it should be in the user-friendly interface as well, because sometimes it's a non-technical stakeholder who participate in those review processes and lines of numbers, which might make sense to a person who actually knows what those numbers are. They are not very useful for decision making, where they are not very useful. Just like, I don't know, like bookkeeping. You can provide a list of transactions, but does it make any use for decision making for the business standpoint? No, it doesn't. You need to provide, I don't know, balance sheet, cash flow, some other reporting, or maybe some calculations for margin, calculations for this period, for months, for year, for the quarter. And those numbers are useful, they're user-friendly. Very similar concept for artificial intelligence. When people are making decisions, they need to have something they can actually interpret, something that actually affects their actions, outputs, conditions, and they can actually use this to make decisions. So that's what I guess they mean, user-friendly interface for artificial intelligence and for explanation why artificial intelligence are doing this way or another way.
Yes, it's also interesting how people are learning to adapt to the interfaces, that chat interface, if you think when ChatGPT was released. Yeah. Just having that very basic conversational interface was already a really good start.
It's user-friendly interfaces, right? I mean, you have a huge model that produces vectors, that produces, what is it, attention mechanism and does all the numbers. But guys, don't give me those attentions. Don't give me those vectors. Just create an essay for me, right? Because I need to pass exam and I need to give an essay to the professor.
Yeah, and I need to write a speech, or I need to do something, whatever that is, instead of having a blank page.
And it's just user friendly. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean that's good. So overall, there are quite a few things. But thanks, Dimitri, our resident AI expert, as usual, always giving us huge amounts of practical, useful information. I think that's it for our episode for today. And today's AI Revenue Amplifier podcast, we covered human oversight, things like explainable AI, transparency, ethics, continuous monitoring. I mean, all those quite fancy words, but there's quite a lot of good stuff we cover today. User-friendly interfaces, all of that comes together, I think, in AI and AI systems being trustworthy and effective. So we gave a few real-world examples and some how these principles can work in practice. I really want to thank you for joining us today and stay curious. Stay curious. Keep exploring the incredible world of AI. And if you've enjoyed this episode and some of our previous episodes, please subscribe, leave a review, hit the like button. It helps us with the algorithm, and your feedback helps us improve and to bring more content. And I really would like to add improved content based on what you require. So we can always bring additional resources, additional people on the program, etc. But I'm signing off now. AI Revenue Amplifier podcast, thank you very much. Stay tuned for more exciting explorations into this world of artificial intelligence.
Thank you. Thank you, Dadi.